I guess only geniuses can play with toys when they're over 50 and get away with it. We're talking Wonder Woman. Hit it. It was 1977. Indira Gandhi resigned as Prime Minister of India. Spain held its first election in 41 years. The Clash released their eponymous first album, and Wonder Woman battled a quasi-toy man at Christmas. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s and late 70s, we got it covered. Now, joining me are two Totally Rad Christmas all-stars. You'll know them as two of the elves from Tis the Podcast, Tom Crow and Anthony Caruso. Or is it Anthony Caruso and Tom Crow? Guys, how's it going?
It's Anthony Caruso and Tom Crow.
You got it right the first time.
Oh, this is going to be a fun show. I can't wait for this one.
Jerry, I appreciate you inviting the worst on along with the best. I think it's very nice you're throwing
comical in here. I do too. Anthony needs to feel good about himself sometimes. He really does. It's nice when Robin is included. I don't like going places my own, you know, as Batman and not having my less talented, weaker sidekick.
Fighty words.
Challenge. That was below the belt.
Was that too far?
Well, you know what? As a Joker, I don't like
nobody
going
wants to be Robin. I don't think the actor.
As a Joker, I don't want to go
anywhere.
I don't
think anybody ever cast as Robin was.
Was proud to be Robin? I don't think so either.
You know what?
Yeah, I don't think anybody who was cast as Robin was excited to be Robin.
Well, you know what? If Tom is my Batman, then I'm his Jason Todd or Damian Wayne. I'm going to be the snarky Robin to him.
Well, Jason Todd does die, so I don't know if I'd want to be him.
Touche.
I know he comes back, but still.
I'll be Damian then.
It's pretty painful.
I'll be
Damian. Well,
Damian
does die too, but either way.
You know what? Let's just scrap it all together. I'm Joker. He's Harley Quinn. He's my psychic.
Uh-oh.
Well, I don't want to get into the issues of how much you're in love with Harley Quinn and how that relates to me. That makes me very uncomfortable, knowing your proclivities towards Harley Quinn.
That might be an uncomfortable speech there. Yeah, little talk.
I think we should change the subject because I'm becoming very uncomfortable.
Okay,
with
how
Anthony's
about Wonder Woman?
Undying love for me. Wonder Woman.
So
I have not watched Linda Carter in decades, y'all. This is going to be fun.
You know what? I actually hadn't either. I remember watching so much of it growing up because it was in syndication in the 80s, and I hadn't seen an episode in a long time. And there was a charm to this one that I actually quite liked, even though it's kind of bonkers and all over the place story-wise, but I liked it, man. I really enjoyed this episode.
I appreciated that Frank Gorshin, aka the Riddler, made an appearance in this episode as another DC character.
one of the few actors to go up against Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
a rad title to carry.
Are you kidding? I would love to have that title. I mean, I don't care which villain I'd be playing. If I could go against all three of them, that would be so cool.
And he's probably still the best live action Riddler we've ever gotten.
Yeah. I don't know about probably. we'll see, I guess, when this new Batman movie comes out. But
I will say though, I'm with Tom. I haven't seen this show in so long. I did see Linda Carter recently, though, in another piece of Wonder Woman content.
But, yeah, she did have a cameo as I forgot her name already.
But
I will
say though that
have you not seen it? Okay, I'll cut the
Julia
spoilers.
Julia already spoiled it for him.
Julia ruined it for me.
Oh, I gotcha.
I will say, though, I think it's funny that you had me on for Lois and Clark, which also featured a toy maker villain. And toy I man, find it yeah. toy man. So I find it funny that you have me back for Wonder Woman versus a toy man now.
It's funny because he's playing Orlik Hoffman, which is not a toy man in like any DC universe except this particular one. But it's so toy man. It's literally like
toy it's
man.
Literally just
everything
toy
about him. He makes toys that are dangerous. He builds, you know, replicas
it's
and
toy. Like, it's just toy man.
It's toy man. Just
which begs the question: why do they just use toy man?
That's exactly right. I have no idea. I mean, and but you know, it's you think about it. Toy man is like a perfect fit for like a Christmas villain. You know, toys, Santa, I mean, Christmas gifts. I mean, it makes sense. But yeah, why didn't they just call him Toy Man, or why didn't they just make him, you know, one of the
almost
established guys? I don't know.
I mean, because I will say
he's no leprechaun. I will say he's no leprechaun.
did I will
watch
say
Pot of Gold?
No,
I haven't watched it yet.
I will say, though, it's funny, 2 decades later that George Jefferson really gave Frank Gorshin a run for his money here.
Which one did you like better?
Oh, that's good.
I mean, Gorshin was like you said, he went up against Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. I got to give him the edge just for that.
Yeah, for real. Well, he was also a little more menacing, I think, than Sherman Hemsley. You know, just not quite. You see him and like you just George Jefferson is really all you can picture. So.
Right. Well, especially when his sidekick Wheezy.
Was Wheezy, yeah. That's terrible. It's so terrible.
And all you can think to yourself when Superman is going up against him is, well, you're moving on up, moving on up.
That's exactly right. But I did keep, I mean, as crazy as Frank Gorshin's accent was in this episode,
I did keep
expecting him to do like that awesome Riddler laugh of his, you know, I can't do it, but like I was waiting for it. And of course we didn't get it. But.
Actually, funny fact about that, interesting fact about Frank Gorshin and the Riddler, this year is the 55th anniversary of Batman premiering the 60s TV show. And the pilot was obviously Hey Diddle Riddle featuring the Riddler for the first time. Ooh. Now, I don't remember Frank Gorshin. I think he was the original Riddler. I know at some point they recast him.
In season two, it was, what's his name? The Addams Family guy. I can't think of his name at the moment.
Gomez?
Yes, but the actor. I can't think of the...
Yeah.
But it was him. He replaced him. And then in season three, Frank Gorshin came back.
Yep. But yeah, so check it out. You know, 55th anniversary, something to celebrate, and can't get enough Frank Gorshin or superheroes. So
the Batman TV the Batman TV show is now old enough to retire.
Yeah. Apparently. Well, I mean, you gotta do something. but this show, Wonder Woman is what is the topic for the night. It actually premiered, the pilot was shot 74, I believe, and it was okay. It wasn't great, so they didn't pick it up, but they still kind of thought Wonder Woman could be successful. So in 75, they shot the new pilot, which has the weird name of the new original Wonder Woman, which I thought was kind of creepy. But because what does that mean, new original? It kind of reminds me of Spinal Tap. Y'all remember the movie Spinal
Tap? Oh, yeah, I do.
It's one of my favorite movies. But when they're talking about like other names, we're the originals. And then I guess we've discovered someone else was the original. So we became the new originals. The new original Wonder Woman. And that's when they got Linda Carter on board. And they shot the pilot. And then the next year, they began the season. You know, they began season one, which was set during World War II, something that I completely forgot. I mean, I knew it was World War II, but when I was watching this episode, I had completely forgotten that they had a time shift. And so I was like, why are they all dressed? I mean, maybe they kind of dress like that in World War II. I mean, the whole time I'm like trying to rationalize to myself, like, why are they dressed like 70s? And then it's because after season one, it was so expensive that ABC didn't renew it and CBS picked it up, but only if they could set it in modern times. So they completely like revamped the show. That Steve Trevor is not actually Steve Trevor from season one. It's his son, Steve Trevor Jr., of course, played by the same guy.
Which, by the way, I will just say, I thought for sure that's how they were going to get Chris Pine back in the sequel before they, you know, came up with the whole story and you found out he was still the original Steve Trevor. But like, I thought to myself when they said, oh, he's going to be back, I'm like, I bet they go the TV show route and make him Steve Trevor Jr.
Steve Trevor Jr., yeah. Which is kind of funny because like she had like that kind of romance with, you know, Lyle Wagner as Steve Trevor. And so I guess they kind of teased it here and there, but mostly they kind of just dropped it with his son, because I mean, that's, now that's creepy, right? I mean,
that's creepy.
That's like Captain America, you know, Peggy Carter and Sharon Carter, kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not how your dad did it.
You don't kiss the same way.
Oh, man. That's so yeah. Uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely creepy. So I'm glad they kind of dropped that plot. But they changed like the whole vibe of the show. So like where the first one was like more of, you know, overseas adventures, you know, fighting Nazis and everything, this was more of like a spy kind of thriller procedural kind of a thing. But I thought it was kind of cool that she had a little more agency. She wasn't just like,
right.
She wasn't just his assistant, you know, or his secretary. She was like an actual agent. And so I thought that was pretty cool for the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
It was forward thinking all the way around for the 70s, right? Everything about it. We have people of color in power. We have strong female.
Mm-hmm.
We still have not so nuanced, blatant sexism. Well, every yeah. man who talks to her.
It's funny you say that, because for Christmas, I got the Absolute New Frontier, the Absolute Edition, which is beautiful, hardback, full color, glossy yep. pages. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you know, New Frontier is a period piece. It yeah. goes from mm-hmm. the war to like the 60s, 70s, like around JFK, whatever. But at the end, they put in three bonus stories set within that timeline. And one of them is a Wonder Woman Black Canary team up where they battle sexism, because Wonder Woman's like, this is still when Wonder Woman is like very fish out of order, like, oh, these men are pigs, blah 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 blah. and basically this mini one shot was you know, Black Canary's like, yeah, okay, whatever. And basically this mini one shot had, well, it's essentially like a Playboy Club opening in Gotham. So Wonder Woman's like, well, I'll teach them. I'm gonna change their minds with love and honor. Yeah. And like Black Canary's like, sure. So they end up going to this Playboy Club, and Wonder Woman's disgusted and whatever. And she sees Bruce Wayne there, and he's like, I was tracking a villain. And she's like, even the good ones are pigs. But what happens is, you know, obviously the men just objectify her and she kicks all their butts, and one of them tries to set her on her top on fire, and it's fireproof, so she just whips it off and like beats them all down with it. And they're all on the ground with like black eyes and broken teeth, and they're still smiling up at her. And she's like, and she's like, even when they've been beaten to submission, they still smile. And Black Canary's like, yeah, maybe you want to put your top back. And it's just so funny.
Poor Black Canary with the fishnet stockings. I mean, she's not doing anyone any favors there either.
Right, exactly.
Although she is a really cool character as well. But before we get into like the plot, because this is a convoluted kind of thing here, I got to say, like, what is your general like experience or thoughts on Wonder Woman?
Tom, do you want to go?
You know, first? I grew up with Wonder Woman. She was in the DC universe. I loved it. Like, Linda Carter was an awesome, strong woman when I was growing up. And Gal Gadot's just taking she's taking that character to a whole new level, right?
Mm-hmm.
What she has done, she's done the best stuff DC's made. Let's just be perfectly honest. She's the best thing coming out of the DC universe right now. And Wonder Woman is still on top. I think it's awesome. I think it's great to see such a strong female role model. I do have a little bit of a problem. I mean, I understand it's a product of its time, but just the blatant every man hitting on Linda Carter's Wonder Woman got really old in this. So I imagine if I were watching more of it, it would my annoyance would continue to rise. But overall, yeah, I've always been a fan of Wonder Woman. That royal I would look today because I didn't realize just how the evolution of the royal tiara as it has. So I looked at that through the comics and through the films. It's been a pretty cool development.
Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned the sexism, Tom. I totally agree, the objectification. And it's funny you mentioned that because I kind of touch on that in the new Wonder Woman movie a bit, where like just every guy who passes her feels the need to talk to her, except, you know, it's like a little bit of it's interesting. But yeah, I grew up with DC, so Wonder Woman was always, I mean, again, I've said it on this show before. There is a Mount Rushmore of superheroes for me. It would be Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. They're the big three for me. And Wonder Woman, yeah, I like the representation, the strong female empowerment. And Linda Carter just, she embodied that. And I love that Linda Carter still embraces that role. Like, she is so it's kind of like Mark Hamill with Luke Skywalker. They embrace it. They don't try to run away from their iconic role that essentially got them typecast, right, for everything else. And Tom, I agree with you. Even though I like all the DC movies, Gal Gadot is obviously the best.
It's not even close.
Gal Gadot is obviously the best of them. I think Gal Gadot, that first Wonder Woman especially, does for Wonder Woman what Chris Reeves did for Superman. High praise. High praise from me. She if you follow her in real life, she is that character. Like, she embraces that role too. She goes to the children's hospitals dressed up. She's like an ambassador for the UN. She is Wonder Woman. And I was so, Tom, cover your ears for a second.
You're fine.
I was so happy to see Linda Carter show up in the end as that one Amazon warrior in like the post-credit scene. Mm-hmm. And I would love if they found some way in the third one to have her put on the original Wonder Woman suit and team up with Diana Prince and like take on Giganta or someone. That would be so cool. Oh,
man, can you imagine?
Either way, Linda Carter and Gal Gadot are both amazing, and they're both Wonder Woman to me. But I'm gonna give my edge to Gal Gadot.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
And I hope in the third movie as well, they have her twirl to turn into her costume.
I think it's the acting style and the evolution of acting in general. 70s acting has its place in history. Mm-hmm. Just like if we go back and we look at how what acting was like in the 40s, I really, you know, I like the 80s stuff, but my real coming of age was in the 90s. I was, you know, 9 years old when we hit 1990. So as the style of acting changed in the 90s and became a little more realistic, I attached to that a lot more. So when Gal Gadot's style of acting and her portrayal of Wonder Woman it resonates better with me than Linda Carter's. But I like I said, I still love Linda Carter. I love what she did for the role, for the voice of women in the 70s and early 80s, and she was just awesome.
Mm-hmm. And for the DC brand in general, like, I know Jerry, you've seen it. I'm not sure if you have, Tom. Somebody made that amazing fan trailer for the Justice League movie. With Michael Keaton's Batman, Linda Carter's Wonder Woman, Christopher Reeve's Superman, and what's his name's The Flash?
John Wesley-Shipp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had Gene Hackman and Jack Nicholson in it. And I was like, how did Warner Brothers let this opportunity pass by without getting the three of them together? And I know Wonder Woman was, I know, you know, that was 10 years prior to Christopher Reeves and Michael Keaton or whatever, but I think they still could have done it.
Superman came out in 78, so it was right that's true. Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
It was really just 10 years prior to Batman, which would be fine. I mean, I don't see that being a problem because even in Superman 4, which was late 80s, I mean, even then, Christopher Reeves still, you know, looked like Superman at least.
Yeah. So. And that trailer, though, I've watched that a million times. I think to myself, lost opportunity.
It is good. I remember wanting so bad to have the Flash come on, you know, team up with Batman, just because it was that same style, that kind of weird noir. Is it 40s? Is it now kind of feel? You know, they never really settle on like a vibe for it. So it has almost a timeless feel because it's so ambiguous. But then, you know, Danny Elfman wrote the theme song for that too. So I was like, oh, perfect. Look, you already have themes. Let's go. So I remember wanting that so bad. But for me, I think I might prefer Linda Carter to Gal Gadot. And not so much because of the acting, although Gal Gadot has gotten better. She's really not an actress, you know, yet. But I can't say the same about Linda Carter either. I think they're kind of on that level playing field. But I think for me, it's mostly because, and I could be way off base here, but I feel like because it was the 70s, it was a little more feminist, I suppose.
Interesting, yeah.
And so, not that she's not. I mean, it just, I felt like she had more power. Even though she doesn't do nearly as much as the new one does, she just felt more powerful to me. And, you know, Wonder Woman is a very powerful figure. And so, to me, I got to give it to Linda Carter.
That's totally fair. That's
what I like.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think Gal's done a great job with the role. So this is the first Christmas episode. The second one is like crazy bonkers. I mean, if you've seen the Leprechaun's Christmas Gold, then you've kind of seen that episode. But this
including Irish stereotypes to the hilt.
Yes, very much so. this episode is called The Deadly Toys. Go ahead.
Have we ever thought some stereotypes are there for a reason?
Well, I'm part Irish, so I guess I can say it. Yes.
Me too. I'm predominantly Irish, so I can get away with it, right? Is that how that works?
Hey, oh!
I think that's how it works. I don't know.
Hey, stop. I don't agree with that. Shut up your face, man.
Oh, man, I love it. But yeah, so there was three seasons of Wonder Woman, four if you count the last couple of episodes, which were held back and grouped as like a mini season, I guess. But there were three. And in season two, that's where this one's from, season two, episode 12, The Deadly Toys. And this is, as we alluded to, it talks about Toy Man, which was, you know, he's his own DC character. Why didn't they, like we talked
why about, invent something new?
I don't know why well, they need the, felt they needed to.
The only thing I can think of, and I'm not as versed with Wonder Woman in the comics. Like, I'm more familiar with Wonder Woman via the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Did Toyman ever run into her? Like, he was a Superman villain, technically.
He was definitely
right?
That's a Superman villain, yeah.
That's the only thing I could think of. I'm not sure if he ever appeared in her solo comics. Like, I know sometimes Lex Luthor appears in Batman solo comics. So I don't know if, like, any other villains made that jump to, like, Wonder Woman.
I know few, but I don't recall if Toyman is. Because I'd never really read Wonder Woman comics of this era.
I didn't either.
Much later that, you know, like post-crisis with George Perez and stuff, you know, his whole take that I really
An amazing take on Wonder Woman. And the Earth One Wonder Woman stuff is actually really good. The new one's coming out next month, I think. March.
Oh, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so Wonder Woman in general, and I like how the pilot kind of kept some of her origin intact. That pilot that they shot with Cloris Leachman as Queen Hippolyta, talk about a weird choice there.
That's an amazing choice. I'm sorry, that's just unbelievable.
No. I'm with Jerry. That's a weird choice, but take a look at Cloris Leachman during this time and the 80s, since this is an 80s podcast. She was also a weird choice to replace Mrs. Garrett as well. Let's be real.
it's true. Yeah. But you know what? A lot of comic book stars that now, like we, you know, a lot of these actors that we equate with these characters now were weird choices.
They were.
So, I mean, it I get it. It just, when I saw it, I was like, wait, what? Why would they pick her? But you know, she made it work. She is actually a pretty good actress. So
she can make anything work. I'm sorry, that woman is gold.
Yes, she
is. I always liked Cloris Leachman, and then I watched some of Raising Hope, and
was Cloris Leachman still big? Was she big in the 70s already, or does she?
I think she was. I don't know enough about her to say.
I know, on the 60s Batman show, all the villains were like the draw. They were big actors. Like, they had, I remember reading trivia, like, they had scripts for certain actors written far in advance and would air their episodes based on actor availability, like Burgess Meredith and Cesar Romero and everyone. They would, oh, we can get him. Okay, let's move this script up. So I wasn't sure if like Cloris Leachman, really? For example.
That's yep. cool. That's super cool.
Yeah. That.
Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, even, and if you think about it in Batman, you know, it's like Bruce Wayne, you know, Adam West, he like played it straight the whole time. And it was always the villains that were having so much fun.
Oh, you know? Burgess Meredith made me love the Penguin.
Right. That's yes. so iconic.
Yes, yep. It is. So much that Danny DeVito had to do it when he played the Penguin.
Yep. Sadly, I don't think Colin Farrell is going to be doing it in Matt Reeves's movie coming out.
I hope he does. Even if it's like a throwaway too. Laugh, you know, a nervous laugh.
Even if it's just kind of like
I hope he does.
Clearing his throat or something. Like, yeah, like something like that.
Even that, yeah, I'd take it. I'd take it. But yeah,
still
so
not sure
so,
what I think about that.
Oh yeah, just wait till you see him, and then you'll be like, okay, I get it.
Yep. Yep.
But no, so they kept her for this thing. They kept her from, you know, she's an Amazon from Paradise Island. She has the mystical belt and everything, and she travels to Man's World and all that. She's recalled. Right after about 1945, and she's gone for about 35 years. She returns, and now this is what brings us here to the Deadly Toys. And it's weird because it starts like right away. We get into the plot. There's no like intro or anything. It's just like bam, and we're in this board meeting, I suppose, where they're talking. These scientists are talking about this this weapon that they that they were developing, and how they realize the. Propensity for evil it could cause, and so they just destroyed all their notes. And right away we get this awesome scene where the head scientist is speaking, he just starts repeating himself and slower and lower, and something
and the
happens.
Creepy blinking,
yes. And he's like has like a twitch, like a nervous twitch with his eyes where he just blinks, you know, and you're like, what's going on with this guy? And all of a sudden he starts to melt into this big puddle of goo and circuits. And there's only like a couple of circuits thrown in this pile of goo, which made me laugh. He's supposed to be an android, and
none of the wires are connected to anything at all.
That's exactly right.
You know, I love a good show that opens up with this, with one character for whatever reason starting at the beginning and giving giving a discourse on what all everybody in the room has been doing, you know, like, okay guys, in case we forgot what we've all been doing, what each of you have been spending the last 2 years working on, let me go ahead and recap it. And then we'll start the action. Like it's especially again, going back to the 70s, it's just really funny.
Yeah. It's definitely a Silver Age trope, but it's funny because that's how I always start all my meetings every time I'm in a meeting. So as you all know,
we've been working on this project for the past 5 years.
So gentlemen, as you know, we are all Christmas podcast hosts. We are all hosts of Christmas podcasts. We've been working for a few years now at building a Christmas podcast network. And what brings us all here today is our love of Christmas. I mean, you don't do that, right? That doesn't happen.
Nobody talks like that. No, it's definitely of its time, but I mean, it's so funny that like the faces on everybody, they're just in shock and horror, which I mean, I would be too.
Are they?
A grown man just, well, not all of them, but some of them do emote, and they just, you know, if I saw a grown man just melt into a puddle of goo and, you know, with a couple of circuit boards just thrown in there, I mean, I'd be pretty upset.
You're a child of the 80s, Jerry. The 80s was the goo decade.
Exactly. So I know how to respond properly to goo.
It led way to everything that Nickelodeon did with goo, right?
That's right.
Nickelodeon was slime.
But it was the next step of evolution of goo.
As a child of the 90s who grew up on Nickelodeon, it was slime.
It was, but it was the next generation. It was the logical evolution. I don't think we would have gotten to slime without goo.
Yeah, you can't do that. And television was directly inspired by this episode of Wonder Woman. Spread that around.
Well, don't forget, there is a step between slime, goo and slime, and that's ooze, as demonstrated by the Ninja Turtles.
Ooze, yeah. But I feel like ooze came later. Or maybe it was just popularized later.
Hey, Jerry, what's your podcast about? Three grown DC nerds talking about the difference between slime and ooze.
It's the secret of the ooze.
I love you guys.
Back at you, bud. Right back at you guys.
But now we're introduced to to our main players here. We get the Wonder Woman. We get Steve Trevor Jr., played by Lyle Wagner, and we get is it Major Dexter.
Major, no,
I have a question about Kyle Wagner because I haven't gone back to watch the first season. Does he play the role with any perceptible difference, or is he essentially still playing his father, even though he's a son now?
I haven't gotten a chance to binge it.
Okay,
it's on one of my to-do lists coming up because I have like 6 weeks off that's coming up in April, so. I'm very excited to catch up on all these shows. So I don't know, but I know that he doesn't know who Diana Prince is. He's only heard of Wonder Woman from his father, though his father never introduced her. So he was pretty safe as far as that.
Probably for the best, because that would make the dating aspect even creepier if she knew him when he was a kid growing up.
I've seen a lot of beautiful marriages come out of, former babysitters or teachers, right?
but they work at the IADC, which, hold on,
IRAC, Interagency Defense Command. Got it.
Yeah, the IADC, they have a supercomputer, IRAC.
That's what I was.
You mean they have a light bright with a guy talking? Well,
that's what a supercomputer was back in the day, Tom. it was a light bright.
But the lights didn't even change. Like, there was no motion happening. It was just,
Yeah, that was a pretty.
It was a straight
computer.
Up light bright.
The Star Trek computers looked better.
Kit was amazing with the way the line would
Kit.
It looked cool. Like a heart monitor. Yeah.
Yeah, but with its sentiment.
Yeah, Kit was super rad. You had to think about their budget, I guess. And so, what's that?
Might one say Kit was totally rad?
I would.
And I'm still surprised. I'm still surprised that between Iron Man and Batman comics, nobody has, especially Batman, no comic book writer has redesigned the Batmobile to like be a smart computer yet. Like one that actually talks to Batman. But I guess that's what Alfred's for.
Like Batman meets...
Oh, like Kit? Make the Batmobile like Kit?
Batmobile meets Kit?
But I guess that's what Alfred's for in his ear, right?
Yeah, I guess you don't really...
Maybe Alfred dies and he programs his brain into the Batmobile. Now that's like Batman.
That's what I was going to say.
Did you ever read Digital Justice?
No.
Batman Digital Justice? Oh man, I remember when I got it. It was like so awesome. It's set in like a future. It's Commissioner Gordon's nephew that takes over the role of Batman. And it's kind of by accident. Bruce Wayne essentially like downloaded all of his like knowledge and stuff into the bat computer. And it was cool for its time, but
I mean, perhaps it's best that no writer tackles that nowadays. Cause if you remember Batman and Robin, when Alfred was dying, he did download his brain into that computer. Intruder alert.
Oh, that
alert.
Was terrible, man. That was
and he generated Batgirl's costume.
I've managed to block Uncle Alfred. Most of that movie out, except for Arnold Schwarzenegger's puns.
How could you block out Arnold Schwarzenegger when he makes his henchmen sing "I'm Mr. White Christmas"?
Well, gotta have groupies. So.
You gotta have Christmas on a Christmas podcast. So you're welcome for bringing it back around to the main.
But we meet our main cast, and they're talking about how this one scientist was replaced. The other two are still human. They've had him checked out. We got to hide him because they come to this conclusion right away. If he was replaced by an android, someone's going to replace the other two and take them. I mean, there's like a million other conclusions they could have jumped to, I think. like he was always an android, and maybe that's how they were able to progress their work. Yeah, I mean, there's like so many things you could come up with instead of immediately like, well, no, I mean, we... Obviously, someone's going to kidnap these guys and replace them with androids as well.
I mean, that's a trope in sci-fi, right? Everyone jumps to the easiest confusion.
It's very easiest body conclusion. Snatchers, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. For sure.
Lizard people.
Yeah. But so they decide to put them in hiding. And while Diana, who is an agent, again, is going to go check out, the place where they live. So she goes to check it out and discovers another android. She runs into one, which I thought was the way he was dressed had me going because it's so 70s. He's got the turtleneck with the sports coat over it.
It's the only thing that would be more 70s is if he had like a rug of chest hair popping out over the, like, the neck collar.
That's true. But so, you know, of course she changes into Wonder Woman, chases him down, and she gets him with her lasso, you know, her magic lasso.
Without even, I mean, that was the most uninspired lasso throw I've ever seen in my life. It was terrible. And I get the guy's an android. I get that he's an android. I do. I understand that. Please don't correct me when I say this. There was no fight to get away from her at all. It's like, oh, I'm going to shuffle my feet twice, step backwards, shuffle my feet twice, step backwards. That was terrible.
Wait, let's go back to the lasso throw for a minute. It's like at those pop-up amusement parks.
Yes, where, the little, like, ring toss.
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, it was a very bad throw, yeah. But she catches him, and she compels him to tell him the truth and explain things, and he can't because, as she says, I guess he wasn't programmed to tell
whatever you were programmed for, I guess it wasn't telling the truth.
Yeah.
I had to write that down because I'm like, this is terrible.
So bad. The writing is terrible. Yeah. So he melts because I guess he can't violate his prime directive or something. He's like a Terminator. He's got to follow through. And so the conflict makes him melt because it seems like anytime they're under, well, no, because he's not really under, the first one's not really under stress. So I don't know. I guess they're just kind of faulty. And whenever.
They say later on, right? They say later on that the dolls don't exactly have a flawless performance.
Well, that's true. They do say that. Yeah.
And Major Dexter says, I don't want better. I want perfect.
Yeah, you ain't getting that, bro.
No, no.
He will be as perfect as your acting is.
But one thing she does find, yeah, for real. You got to love his perm, though. He had a pretty rad perm.
Again, so 70s. But I think 70s, I think that's what added to the charm of the special, though, was how 70s it was.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. Because, I mean, if they were to do that, I mean, even 10 years later, it wouldn't have flown. Like,
well, 10 years later, he would have been wearing like the MacGyver,
David Hasselhoff,
like
don't hassle the Hoff.
Yeah.
You want to bumble with the bee? But she does find one thing I forgot to say in the lab while she's looking around. She does find these tiny little army men. Ooh, clue. It's ridiculous.
It's really not a subtle clue either. And no. These grown men playing with the... I'm not going to be the negative one. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Put a pin in the grown men because that's my quote from Gag Me With a Spoon.
Nice. Yeah, it turns out it's part of, like, they reveal it's part of, like, a whole thing where they redo the battles of such and such with military strategy and something, which, you know, you're supposed to believe, okay, I get it. They're military scientists trying to come up with a weapon. Of course they would play with military toys.
Essentially, I thought it would look like more of a game of nerdy Risk where...
That's what I thought it was. I was like, it's one of those dice rolling games, right? Where you like get your measuring tape out and you move, oh, okay, I move this many inches, you know, based on your dice roll.
Haha, I took China from you. Good luck conquering Asia now, Jerry.
The Ukraine is strong.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. It's
a good Seinfeld callback.
Seinfeld quote there. Oh, man. It's crazy. But yeah, so they decide to hide away these scientists, and they basically, one of the scientists who I was trying to place him, and I remembered where he's from. He's actually, I think he's one of the co-pilots from Airplane.
Wait,
like he's Unger, I think. Or he's Dunn. I think he's like Commander Dunn from Airplane, right? I didn't look up.
Oh my God, either. You know what? I think it may be.
He just, as soon as I saw him, I was like, I know this guy. But yeah.
So, I have never.
Tom's never seen Airplane.
You've never seen Airplane? Oh, man. Well, of course, now I hyped it up too much. I mean, it's okay. It's good.
No.
It's been hyped up my entire life.
Okay, it's been hyped up on our podcast too. We and Julia are still determined to do a Patreon episode to get Tom to watch it.
I love Airplane. It's just ridiculous. but yeah.
It's Leslie Nielsen, right?
It's Leslie Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen got yeah. you expect it was ridiculousness.
Like his first kind of comedic role. He had only done straight man kind of things before then. And
which is so funny because now you only associate him with like more.
Yeah.
The more people gun. Associate yeah. him with the comedy
Police squad and the naked and gun stuff. And all yeah. that. Yeah. But so one of the, you know, the first scientist, Dr. Prescott, is kidnapped by this dumbest thing. Again, featuring the whole Toy Man plot, we get he gets package delivered. It's these army men, which one of them shoots him with like a dart or something. And so he's
it's a like, little cannon.
Yeah, that's what it is. The cannon shoots him. And it essentially right? puts yeah. him in like a. Like I don't know what he was poisoned with, or but whatever they injected into him from that cannon, like it kind of made him very susceptible to following orders. So I don't know.
Isn't it a toy butterfly that knocks Wonder Woman out though?
Yeah,
that was so confusing. Yeah, that wasn't just so weird. Yeah. That was weird to me.
Obviously, like, weird their wings and feet and everything about them were laced with the same stuff. I guess I don't know.
A weird. I mean.
Why it just butterflies?
Goes to show a weird villain toy maker is it's like he's Frank just a weird Gorsuch. Villain. Yeah. I never liked him as a villain.
Toyman, yeah, Toyman was never my favorite, especially in the cartoon like, of Superman, where you know he's just like this little doll like dude with like a ventriloquist face or something. It creeped me out.
Yeah, I mean,
ventriloquist dummy face.
But. He's essentially the Kite Man of the Superman universe.
Kite Man, hell yeah.
Did you watch it?
No, I haven't watched it yet. Oh. I still haven't watched it. I'm just that's what he said. That's like his catchphrase in the comics. You know?
Yeah. So. Kite Man, hell yeah.
It's terrible. But yeah, so also there's like a little walking dog toy that comes up to the MP that's outside and you know gets him to fall asleep. I mean, he doesn't die, right? I don't think he dies.
I don't think
later on they say there's like a throwaway line about how the guards, you know, said he stayed in his room, but essentially it puts him to sleep and the guy walks out, you know, the Dr. Prescott now under this mind control just walks out of the room. And that's how he's able to be swapped with a dummy.
Okay. Continue. When we get to the part with Wonder Woman being knocked out, I have problems with this besides the butterflies.
I mean, I get it. It's like hard because Wonder Woman is like very.
She's a god. She's a goddess. How does a toy butterfly.
Yeah,
how can she has how like can a Toy Man take her
durability,
on?
You know, against like blunt force trauma, you know, like she can just withstand that type of attack. It's more like the piercing weapons that get her. And so it's like. They had to come up with some way, I guess, that wasn't too violent to pass.
Oh, but it was sensors. Really dumb.
It was really dumb. It reminded me of that James Bond movie. Which is it? If looks could no, not the last Roger Moore film with Tanya Roberts. That one where they use there's a whole butterfly dance in there, and they use a butterfly to, you know. Poison a guy or something. I mean, it's
what was it? Butterflies in the 70s. Mothra was essentially a giant butterflying.
Butterflies are cool, man. Leave them alone. Oh man, but I love how so Diana goes to check on the. Goes to check on the scientist and he's like, oh, another person. And he seems like he's a normal guy. Like, come have some tea, sit down. And she's like, no, I don't have time. I just want to ask you some questions. And he's like, no, come on. I don't get any visitors or whatever. And she figures out that he's also a robot because as they're talking, he has his hand just resting on the burner from the
electric stove.
Yep. Just from the stove. And it's like
it's red hot.
I was about to say that.
And again, that's another trope too. Like I feel like I've seen that in movies before too, where like the clone or the robot or the alien or something is like touching something like that and they don't realize it. Mm-hmm.
That or like they're chopping something and they cut themselves and nothing.
Cut a finger off.
Yeah. Or when another trope, and I'm glad they didn't go here. Is when the two lookalikes are like, no, I'm the real one. No, I'm the real one. Steve, believe me, I'm the real one. Would I say to kill me if I was not? You know.
Oh, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I'm talking
yeah,
I'm about?
Glad like, they, yeah. yeah, they didn't.
I'm quite, glad they avoided that.
Yeah. But like you said, this definitely has a Wonder Woman versus Wonder Woman clone robot thing fight
and
in it.
I guess, but for the 70s, it looks okay, considering it's Linda Carter playing both of them.
They didn't. There was no competition, though, really, right? Like, this android could not compete.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, like, crazy Wonder robot Woman strength. It's not Wonder Woman strength. But then this is another one of those things of that time where, like, they really mute the powers. So, like, they did that with Hulk, you know, with Lou Ferrigno, where he just is not as strong as Hulk really is, you know. And so I felt like they did that here, too, with Wonder Woman.
That was one of the few that was one of the few things I liked about the Ed Norton Hulk, was just how his strength was just all encompassed. Like, there was nothing the Hulk couldn't do.
Yeah.
That was like that's how I had the Hulk pictured. Although Lou Ferrigno was the one in my bath with me.
Lou Ferrigno was awesome. I mean, that dude is huge.
My bath toy I had all the time. My bath toy growing up, like my single bath toy that I played with for years was the Hulk. He would suck water in his mouth and spit it out. And now that I have a kid and I cut one of those rubber toys open. Uh-huh. It was so disgusting. I would never let my daughter play with one of those for any amount of time. I had mine for years. I can't imagine what I was squirting in my bathtub with.
All sorts of mold and bacteria. Yeah, for sure. It's so funny because they get this next one checked out. Diana takes it upon herself to move, you know, to move this guy. She's going to hide him. She's not going to tell anybody. It's like she just thinks. But we get all this intercut with like several scenes. So there's a toy maker, you know, who we see bringing Prescott in and all that. And that's like our sense. Okay, he's a bad guy. He's the one responsible for all this. But we also get a scene of like Steve, you know, talking to Irek about, you know, what to get Diana for Christmas. This is like one of the very few indications that it's an actual Christmas episode. He's just asking, what do I get her for Christmas? And Irek says, why don't you ask Wonder Woman?
For the record, there are, when Wonder Woman's versing Wonder Woman, there's some garland hanging up on the concrete background.
Yeah, I mean,
The Christmas I liked was, I liked seeing a blow mold. Oh.
Yes. Yeah. I love blow molds. And it's funny because, you know, I do Christmas lights and all that stuff. I love, you know, even watching like the great Christmas light fight on ABC and everything, you know, they have like these amazing shows. But to me, the ones that I like best are like the ones with just like tons of blow molds and like the, you know, garland and like the old school stuff, like all over the place. And I think I'm sure it's just because of the era I grew up in, but to me, like, that's just screams Christmas more than even the way cool light displays, which I love. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it's just like, that's not Christmas to me. You know what I mean?
No, I completely agree.
You know what was Christmas to me though?
What's that?
It was amazing seeing that Santa blow mold that they kept showing. It was like the building with nothing Christmassy except one Santa blow mold.
Yeah.
And that blow mold was so vibrant and bright. The colors didn't look like faded like they all do now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can we take a moment to admire blow molds? Because this past year on eBay, I was looking for some of the old ones my parents had, like just for my place. And like, they're so expensive now, for really good quality ones.
You can't afford those, Anthony.
I can't afford those.
Can't afford them. No, that's for sure. So, Tom, if you need a gift idea for next Christmas,
but
I actually found what I'm getting you next year for Christmas.
Ooh,
is it a footprint?
No, I will share my present. I will share it with you, though.
That was awesome. Oh man, he showed me what he texted to me. He's like, this is what I'm getting Anthony.
I tried to get Jerry to do one insensitively, you know, while he's dealing with a broken hand.
Hey, it's not quite as swollen today.
You should do this with me. Dude, my hand, I'm thinking no.
It's like, I would, but I can't, sorry. But it was like, other than that, you know, the mention of like Steve Trevor asking what to get for Christmas. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of Christmas in this episode.
No.
which is kind of a bummer because I was looking forward to like Wonder Woman at like Christmas time, but you could tell they filmed it in like the summer. You know, it's just it didn't look Christmassy very much at all, except for that one Santa that kept was like ringing the bell, you know, Salvation Army style outside of the toy store, which they kept focusing on him. I thought he was going to have like some sort of, he was going to come into play somehow, and he never
I did. Thought he was going to be like an android or something.
Yeah. And I was like, Wonder Woman's going to have to fight Santa. Nope.
It's funny you say that, Jerry, though, because I remember we talked a bit during the Superman, the Lois and Clark episode, how we wish they were a little more Christmassy because Superman is somebody who embodies, like, right. He's a character you want to set at Christmas. And I feel like Wonder Woman's another one, that hope and everything associated with Christmas. You would think that the story would play off of that a bit more because yeah. She embodies that spirit.
Yeah, so. I mean, she literally, like, through the whole Black Lantern saga, you know, she became a Star Sapphire, you know, who's they're, you know, fueled by love because that's how much love she has for, like, the world and everything. I mean, so that's, like, a perfect trope to fit into the Christmas season. Of course, that's much later, you know, but still, it's just that you would think, and I guess it kind of fits in because if she's, I guess she would be a little more pagan in her beliefs just because of the Greek god kind of thing. But
just because Zeus created her out of clay.
Zeus is her dad now, according to the new continuity. Yeah, she's another one whose backstory has changed so much that I don't even know anymore. Oh, goodness. But yeah, so we get all these kind of scenes cut in. We discover that turns out, you know, she realizes with those little toy soldiers, something's wrong here. I wonder where he got these. How she figured that out. I don't know how she figured that out. Just because it was toy soldiers, like that's to blame somehow. I mean, like, what if they were just into like playing golf? She's like, I don't know about these golf clubs. And would she go to like a golf, you know, you know, a golf course or something? I don't know.
Obviously. What else would she do?
Oh, man. It's strange. But yeah, so she figures out, okay, for sure, it's something's up with these figures. I'm going to find out where they're from and I'm going to go. And so she goes to the toy store and that's where she has a confrontation with, I'm going to call him Toy Man, even though he's not Toy Man.
Fair. I mean, it's the easiest.
Easiest way than saying Orlik Hoffman, which I don't know if that's, is that German? Is that supposed to be German?
He's very German.
He's German.
It's definitely, yeah. So he,
and I mean, Frank the Riddler Gorshin moved away from Gotham City. That's his new identity to hide from Batman.
He's hiding from Batman. He's really the Riddler.
He's really the Riddler. That's why the plan is so overly convoluted, just like they were in the 60s show.
He's just dying to say, riddle me this, and he never can. So he acts out with little toy soldiers.
Riddle me this, Diana. What's he would make it? He would have a riddle that doesn't make any sense. Like, oh my God. I used to love that on the show. The riddle would make no sense, and Robin would be like, I. There's an I in this word. Holy smokes, Batman.
Oh, he's yeah, talking. Yeah. And I know again, we're going on a tangent here, but the Batman 66 movie, like the, you know, how they figure out, you know, the riddle.
Oh, my God. First
of
all,
it was a riddle in the form of a joke. So that was odd.
A riddle in the form of a joke. The Joker and the Riddler, they're working
together.
and it did happen at sea. C for Catwoman. Like, what?
I mean, Jerry, just because we can't comprehend it, he is the world's greatest detective.
That's true. Make sense. But yeah, the the joke about the canary. I think it's, what is it, a sparrow with a machine gun or something like that? It's like the most ridiculous answers. And I love how the Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara are just like, of course. Like, it's the most natural thing. I mean
one last thing before we get off that tangent. Chief O'Hara always used to make me laugh. I forgot there was one episode where it was like, Batman's not answering the phone. Oh my gosh, Commissioner, what do we do now? We're gonna have to do some actual police work.
Oh, geez. I remember it used to make me so mad that commissioner Gordon didn't have a mustache and glasses.
Oh man, right?
Right? But
Alfred,
right?
But Alfred, but
Alfred
did.
Had glasses. Ooh, it got me so mad. It's the most ridiculous thing to be mad about. But for some reason, it bothered me as a kid. But anyway, so Wonder Woman has a confrontation with the toy man. You know, she's like, do you sell these toy soldiers? Right away, he's like, no, check out this other shop here. But I'm sorry, I'm an old man. I get tired. I'm cranky. Here, take this little toy. And I'm sorry. And she's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So she's driving home and he...
That's not weird at all.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's like... It's the adult equivalent of going over to the van and getting candy.
But turns out there's a tracking device in that toy. And he sends a plane with like live ordnance, this little toy prop plane, to go after her. And she's getting like bombed and shot at by this little toy plane.
And he has such a fantastic campy line about the plane too. Something like, and now my sweet, it's time to fly or whatever.
Well, I think he even says it's your maiden voyage.
And her, your maiden voyage.
It's maiden voyage.
To catch a maiden or something like that.
To catch a maiden. It's a maiden voyage, .. To catch a maiden.
Well, when she catches it, the jump is so unbelievable. Like, yeah. It's more... At 2 years old, Ellie couldn't jump and get off the ground. She would like lift one foot and then the other. And that's very much what I felt like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elizabeth Wonder does Woman the same did
thing.
Here.
Yep. She does the same thing.
Yeah. It was like a toddler jump. Mm-hmm. And she got it. And, you know, it, for whatever reason, she doesn't disarm anything. She doesn't stop anything. It just stops shooting and bombs and bullets at her. Even as it gets the Santa gets closer, I mean, that made it very Christmassy. Let's add that he gave her a Christmas toy to put on her dashboard, which is also
again when Santa got closer.
She did it.
Yeah,
when Santa got closer again, I was thinking, Android fight right here.
I kept waiting for something to happen, but this is she's being followed by the plane, and this is a second transformation into Wonder Woman. But I love how she hides behind a tree. It's like,
yes, yes, yes.
Like a big V. I mean, there's, if a plane wanted to hit you, it would hit you behind that tree. It wasn't big enough for anything. But yeah, you're right. Then she catches it, and that's like the end of the, that's the end of that. It's like a hard cut into the next segment. oh man. It's just the whole thing is odd. But I do like it. It's odd.
I cannot
figure out how. I mean, this is the same problem that I had with Christopher Reeve's Superman. There's that scene where he's getting ready to tell Lois who he really is. Uh-huh. And he takes his glasses off. Mm-hmm. And he's pondering, and then he looks at her and he puts them back on, and you can't tell he's suddenly can't tell he's at, you know, Clark Kent is actually Superman because of these weird glasses.
I'm gonna stick up for Christopher Reeves there, because that is a he is Superman when his whole posture changes when he takes off those glasses.
Yeah,
and you can literally see him transform into Superman before your eyes, and then like the minute he puts them back on.
Well, and his voice, I mean, he deepens his voice as well. I mean, as an actor, that was like a great performance. Mm. But I know what you're saying, Tom. It's like, how do you know that he's him?
Well, especially as
the physical look.
As a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist.
Huh? Can't tell it's me, huh?
As a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, she should know.
Well, I don't know. I have questions about Margot Kidder's Pulitzer.
Oh, well, Margot Kidder's. Amy Adams definitely should have. Well, he didn't even try to hide it from her.
I still think my favorite Lois Lane is Terry Hatcher.
Yep, me too.
Yeah. Even after that episode recovered where she's like, mine, and like regressed to a little
with that toy man, even then.
Yeah,
she had the edge. She had the beauty. She had the brains. She had, I mean, just everything about her. She felt like Lois Lane from the comics. Amy Adams felt like she was trying a little too hard to me. And Margot
she felt
Kidder
more like
never,
Mary Jane to me.
Yes. Yes.
She would have been a better Mary Jane.
And Margot Kidder just felt like she was, I don't know. She just didn't quite have the brains for me.
There
and I think part of that was
no.
was exaggerated by her, by, you know, her, how do you spell this? How do you spell that? I mean, that part just, you know, they really played that part up.
So. Say what you want about Margot Kidder. She still has one of the top five scenes in any superhero movie. Don't worry, ma'am. I've got you.
You've got me.
Who's got you?
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
I love that scene. That's
a great scene. Yeah. That's like the Superman scene, you know?
Yep.
But Diana goes to check. She's starting to suspect Major Dexter, because when he's like, hey, you moved Dr. Lazar. And she's like, yeah. You know, he's like, well, where is he? And she throws a fit because she won't tell him. You know, she's like, well, the less people know, the better. And so she starts to suspect him, like, well, why are you throwing such a big fit? And so she goes to the computer later on and you know, IRAC, and says, okay, well, you know, I'm looking for blah, blah, blah. She manages to figure out, because his memory banks or certain events have been erased, and she realizes that it's a name of an associate of Major Dexter. And she's like, you know, he can't tell it because memory bank's been erased. She's like, okay, well, who, like, where was it? Who's before and who is after? And it's like an H and an I. So she's like, Hoffman, it must be the toy man. They're in it together. Okay, whatever. Nicely convenient 70s, you know, storytelling there.
Detective work.
Yeah, but this
she got those skills from Batman.
but this is when Dexter calls her, and because this is that scene where he meets with Hoffman, and you know, you were telling about, you know, I want perfect, you know, about the androids.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so he calls Diana and says, "Hey, you know, I found the person that has the." You know, Dr. Prescott and I forgot Dr. Tobias. Meet me at this place at midnight. You know, it's the dumbest thing. Why would you meet at midnight at that place? Like, why? Something's got to be suspicious. And she doesn't show up as Wonder Woman. She shows up as Diana Prince. Like, mistake number one. And so she meets Wonder Woman. You know, the android that Toy Man built. And immediately, mistake number two, she just starts interacting with it instead of, you know, like overpowering it or anything. She's like, all right, let's see where this goes. Essentially.
I mean, I get this was the era, though, of Wonder Woman in the comics where she was much more.
Yeah, it is.
She was a very gullible for a period in the comic.
I think the I Ching era of where she trained because she lost some of her powers, and so she ended up becoming kind of a secret agent, kind of just, you know, she martial artist, like martial arts was like her big thing. It was very like Charlie's Angels.
I was thinking like between her and Steve Trevor was much more Get Smart, like Maxwell Smart.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Agent 99, except she's more Maxwell Smart because she's a more gullible, like, you know, hero of the show.
Yeah. Well, she's definitely as competent as 99. Oh, man. But yeah, this is where we get the infamous butterfly scene.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
This was terrible.
But somehow she's surprised with some paper. I mean, they look like paper. I don't know what they're made out of. Butterflies that just kind of fly at her and flutter all around her. And I guess they quote unquote sting her.
She is a god. She is a god. How is it affecting her?
Well, is she actually a god? I thought she was just an Amazonian woman.
Probably
it depends on the origin.
This is pre-crisis, so I don't think she was an official demigod goddess here. Yeah.
No. Okay. So, but even in that case, look at the physical things that she can overcome, the attacks, the just how strong she is. I don't think whatever brought these other people down would affect her, right? She would. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like poison. Like Batman has made himself immune to poison.
Mm-hmm.
Superman is immune to everything except kryptonite. Like, yeah.
Well, magic hurts him too, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Mr. Pinsnick or whatever.
Mixie's whatever. Pinsnick.
Mixie Pinsnick. Whatever. We couldn't pronounce it in the episode. I'll tell you, this toy man is not Howie Mandel. I'll say that much.
Yeah, you're right. But so she wakes up, she's been drugged with what is it? Sodium pentothal or something.
Yep.
She basically tells him, you know, everything about, you know, the alphabet soup is a code word. There's a guard, plainclothesman here. There's a guard there. All sorts of things like that. And they just literally, Major Dexter just goes in and uses the information and kidnaps the third scientist with this info. But she wakes up and it just to, you know, turn into Wonder Woman and escape from the prison that she's been in. And we get a fight. This is the where we get our big, big fight here between Wonder Woman and Wonder Woman toy android robot.
And I still maintain that for the 70s, with Linda Carter playing both and the limited amount of effects they had back then, it looked decent-ish.
Well, there was a thing where because they were worried about violence on TV during this era, there wasn't a lot of punches and kicks thrown. So there was a few in like the early second season, but most of it was her like throwing people, finding ways for them to knock themselves out kind of a thing. And you can see that even in like the Super Friends cartoon where they don't really do anything. He-Man, same thing. He never actually punches anybody if they're alive. He'll pick them up and throw them, or he'll find some way for them to, you know, for them to do it themselves, but he never, a punch.
It was the same thing in Batman. That's why they had the POW, that they blocked every punch. They saw them grab them, but the punches themselves are blocked a lot of the time by POWs.
Yeah.
Kabooms.
Yeah. And we, you're right. We did talk about that, Tom. I mean, it was like this whole era was a lot about it. So you're right. There was a lot of grappling. There was a lot of throwing. There wasn't a lot of cool fight choreography, but I mean, it's very typical of the time, so I can forgive them that.
I mean, I'll say Linda Carter did a decent job of, like, you could tell who was Wonder Woman and who was the android. Like, she was just expressionless as the android. She did a decent job, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, in that, like, regard.
But she wins and pretends to be the android, of course. Another body swap.
Another trope.
Yeah, another trope of clone, you know, clone trope or whatever. And they take the scientists to the meeting spot where they're supposed to hand them off and get a big payday and all sorts of things like that. Dex doesn't trust her. He's like talking to the toy man saying, hey, even your best ones, I can tell they're not real. You know, and he's like, maybe not everyone else can tell, but I can tell. He's like, I don't trust this one.
Was that like, I thought that was almost subtle innuendo there. Even the best ones, they're not real. Maybe everyone else can't tell, but I can tell. You know, they were the whole sexual objectification of Wonder Woman. But can we go back?
So one thing that I need to look at too about this, like how real the automatons look, the human automatons.
Ooh, good word.
And how fake everything else is, right? Everything else is just the androids that they've created for the humans look so realistic that they confuse people. But the dogs we see,
no, oh, yeah,
they look,
yeah,
like the pound puppies or whatever.
yeah, why didn't he have more realistic dogs? I guess his specialty was in people.
You know? I do want to say something about the fight real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
it was very Christmassy with the reindeer head in the background mounted on the wall, and that creepy clown in the corner of the fight. I couldn't take my eyes off that creepy clown doll.
There was a lot of cuts to the toys, like the monkey that, you know,
the symbol and, monkey.
Yes.
That one freaks me out too. I'm sorry. That one's bad.
No, I agree. Yeah.
I could think about when I saw the clown was like that old urban legend where like it's like an escape mental asylum acting as a toy. It's like a midget acting like the clown toy in the doll in the kids' room.
I don't think that's the proper nomenclature.
I don't know what they say anymore. I'm so out of the loop. I think it's
either way. It scared the crap out of me.
Come on, that was my Big Lebowski reference, y'all.
I haven't seen the Big Lebowski. I've only seen the first. Only seen the first 20 minutes of it, and then I had
was
to
it
go.
Just not
and
for
I
you?
Never, and I no, I just I had to go. It was there was some reason I had to leave. I never got to see it again. So I know there's a gap in my education, y'all. I'll remedy it eventually. I will with Hocus Pocus.
you're saving that to binge watch with the sequel at this point.
For real. Dex doesn't trust her. He decides to shoot Wonder Woman. She, of course, is the real one. So she blocks it, you know, with her bracelets, and they run. This is my favorite part, where they run and she uses her tiara like a boomerang, which was one of the things they started doing in season two. And I like how they
paid homage to that
in Wonder Woman 84. They do that as well, which I thought was kind of a cool bit.
The bit with the tiaras in Wonder Woman, that bit with the tiara and the way she used her lasso in Wonder Woman 84. I loved how creative they got with the lasso, especially I appreciated it more after watching this episode when I saw how, ring tossed it.
Well, and you gotta love the sound effects too that they it was like wee 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 wee. Something like that. But it gets Toy Man, and then Dex tries to get in the van and drive away with the scientists, but she just lifts it up and yay, it all.
Yeah, comes. One butterfly brings you down, but you lift up an entire van.
I guess her weakness is butterflies. Oh. They're just so cute. This was a, I don't know, it was weird, but I liked it. I really did.
There was no resolution really to what.
Oh, you're right. There is a resolution, which is kind of cool. They decide that she makes them all forget with her lasso of truth. She makes Toy Man and Dex forget like what happened. And so they swap out androids for the scientists, which makes me kind of wonder how many copies of the androids did Toy Man actually make of each of the scientists. But they swap them out and they let them go ahead with their plan to sell them to a foreign power and make a lot of money, knowing that the androids don't have the secret to the XYZ weapon, and knowing that the whoever buys them will be very upset and probably kill them. Yeah. It's dark. Like, they could have just arrested them, but she's like, no, that's too much publicity. So
I mean,
crazy.
That is, because that's Wonder Woman sentencing these guys to death.
Basically, yeah. She's like, I got a better idea. Let's just let the foreign power kill them.
Well, some of the choices they make, and like, you go back to like the old Superman TV show and the old Batman TV show, they make weird choices in their resolution sometimes. Like, you brought up Batman the movie before. Mm-hmm. When he de-dustifies all those world leaders, he rehydrates them.
Yeah.
And basically it's their different languages and brains. Like, they're all scrambled. He just leaves it. He's like, yeah, maybe it's for the best, Rob. And then they walk out. And
they just leave. Yeah. You're right. There's a lot of, it's just strange resolutions that they decide to go with, but.
But speaking of resolution, there was really no resolution to the little anything? Christmas thread in this episode. Like,
no, because he asked like what to get for Christmas. What,
and they don't show.
He asked the computer, and I don't know, ask Wonder Woman.
Ask Wonder Woman.
Yeah, you would have thought they would have ended it with him giving her something.
Yeah, that seems weird. Like something, but nope. Realizing
Diana's Wonder Woman? I don't know, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, there's several hints throughout that. And then I think later on, they actually do explicitly come out and say that Irek knows that she is Wonder Woman.
I mean, right? I feel like that was very heavily implied. They heavily imply it like throughout all these episodes.
I've been for Christmas, I got a big old book of He-Man, which is really cool. It's like a whole encyclopedia of like characters and all sorts of things like that. And so it's really neat because when it gets to Queen Marlena, it talks about how there's two episodes where she basically hints that she knows that Adam is He-Man. And so it just, as I was watching this, it reminded me very much of that, you know, where they're like, you know, He-Man's like, well, why did you free, or Adam, Prince Adam's talking to his mom. He's like, well, why did you free me first? You know? And she's like, oh, well, you're my son. I love you. And a mother knows what a son is capable of. I know you knew exactly what to do. And he's just
And this is very popular in a lot of the comics and superhero stuff as well. Like, they did in Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. You always knew Aunt May, like, had figured it out. She just, all the innuendos, right. And like,
yeah.
Even in the comics at the time, remember Batman always had that inner monologue about how Perry White was too smart a reporter not to know Clark was Superman, and Gordon was too smart a cop not to know he was Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they always imply like they know and they're just letting it slide.
Right.
Yeah. But this was a good one.
I mean, I enjoyed the pure campiness of this episode. Like, it definitely makes me want to go back and like binge the series. I'll say that.
Yeah, I really do also.
I want to see it.
Well, I know in the first season, we get a lot more of her supporting cast. Like, Etta Candy came out in the first season as well. They introduce a sister named Drusilla in the first season that basically brings her back to Paradise Island after the war, which I'm interested. I
was she evil?
Drusilla? I don't think so.
Oh, it sounds like a very just
she becomes
evil
Wonder,
name.
She becomes Wonder Girl.
Because I remember this is also the time, you're talking the 70s, right? Where both Samantha on Bewitched and Genie on I Dream of Genie had the evil clone sisters. Do you remember
that?
Yeah. Like, they both had them. Like, how many times on I Dream of Genie did she get trapped in the bottle and her sister took over and, like, Major Tony never figured it out? Ever.
Oh, man. What's his name? Hagman? I don't remember his first name, but I loved him in Dallas. He played a good
villain.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, it does make
me. I had the weirdest dream.
About Dallas.
The Dallas reference. Yeah.
Bobby. But it does make me ask, or make me want to ask, like, you know, what would you guys say is your happiest memory of Wonder Woman in general, or Wonder Woman, the show in particular?
Do you want to go first, Tom?
Go for it.
Okay, so one thing that this show reminded me of, so nowadays in comics and the movies and stuff, like, they've kind of made Superman and Wonder Woman more citizens of the world, mm-hmm. rather than just American heroes. Like, right. Back then they were like truth, justice, American way. Yeah. And like, I mean, you look at her costume. I miss the stars and stripes on the costume. Like, this costume was classic. And I kind of, I loved that old design of her in the, like, the more Americanized costume. Mm-hmm. So that brought back all the nostalgic feels and like just that era of comics when they have her dressed like that too. And Superman, you know, is the same way, you know.
Which, by the way, for season two, they actually altered her costume just a little bit so that the cleavage was a little more prominent, and that I don't want to call them bloomers. I don't know what you call them on the bottom, but that they're cut a little bit higher as well. Shorts. Yeah. That's a fine word.
Undergarments.
But one of my favorite memories of Wonder Woman overall, if we're not just talking the show though, mm-hmm. is, say what you want about Batman versus Superman, but when she jumps down and saves Batman for the first time and that Wonder Woman theme kicks in before it devolves into a CGI madness, I was like, heck yeah, Wonder Woman on the big screen. Like, she was the best part of that movie. Just like, her solo movie is one of the arguably the best part of the DCEU.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. No Man's Land scene. Oh, that's iconic.
A classic. That's
awesome.
That'll go down in superhero film history as one of the best scenes, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
I should have been better prepared for this, but I want to say there's an episode I remember when I was a kid where she goes home, mm-hmm. fight Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Nazis are coming to
Paradise Island.
Paradise Island. Yeah. And she goes back and we see like inside of Paradise Island, which was really cool. And I really, that stuck with me. I remember that from a kid. I remember watching it because, you know, there was a time where we could all agree Nazis were bad. Mm-hmm. And it was a simpler time.
Now I have a question for you, Tom, because maybe you know it more, or Jerry. In the show, in the comics, are Paradise Island and Themyscira just like interchangeable names? Like, is Paradise Island still technically called Themyscira? Or
yeah,
mm-hmm. they're the same.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
I think Paradise Island is just easier to say and more marketable.
Yeah, that's
true. Honest, for TV, that's probably what it came down to.
Well, especially in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, the spin. When she spins,
the spin is amazing
and turns into Wonder Woman. That's like
it's iconic. Part.
I mean, that's another thing. It's just, you think about Christopher Reeve, you know, running and pulling open his shirt, and you see the big S underneath. You know, you think about Batman just sliding standing down the pole. On a ledge, you know, or
yep.
you know,
sliding down the pole with the costume.
Well, that too, yeah. But you think of Wonder Woman, you know,
stands out.
Yeah, exactly. And that was actually Linda Carter's idea. They were trying to figure out how they could get her to change, and so she said, "Well, what if I do a spin?" And so she came up with that, which I thought was really awesome.
She came up with that herself.
She did herself. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's really cool. But yeah, it's iconic. And how many little girls who've grown up on the show like do that when they're playing, you know, dress up? It's awesome. And I know it's cheesy as heck, but I would love to see Gal do that in the movie, like just be in her citizen clothes and then spin, and she'd be in the costume. I'd love to see it just once. It'd be so cool.
It's got to have that terribly cheesy CGI, just red flash glow, red flash shrink. Oh, look, there she is.
They actually did that so that I guess in the first two episodes, they tried to match it as perfectly. And then they realized if they just used that flash, that they wouldn't have to match the cuts so perfectly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was just a way to like help editing along. But I mean, it worked and it's brilliant. And now it's like you said, it's iconic.
It's just so funny to me that you take that flash when she gets in the costume, and then you watch Lois and Clark in the 90s, and it's just that same red blur effects really didn't progress that much when Superman's flying like really quickly. <Yeah. laughs>
That was yeah, pretty bad.
TV is cheap, right?
But that does bring me to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with the Spoon. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the show. As a guest, I'll let you go first. Just set up the scene, and I will put it up for a vote. And don't worry, I still haven't won, so I don't expect to. It's probably going to come down to y'all. And the winner will get something awesome. I don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be awesome. So whoever would like to go first, go ahead and just set up the scene for us.
I don't even think this is a, like... So this whole special is campy. So I wouldn't even necessarily say this is the worst like a scene, but it's definitely a cheesy line. And I told y'all earlier to put a pin on it when they're talking about grown men playing with toys. And it's when Diana Princess is awfully cheesy line. I guess geniuses can play with toys when they're over 50 and can get away with it. Like, what does that even mean? What does that mean? Get away with it? What does that mean? No kid has to, like, I don't, it just made me laugh so much. Like, it was just awfully written.
I'm going to go with what I already read, which is when the awesome scene when we have the ring toss over the completely compliant android who shuffles his way back to Diana. She compels him to tell the truth, and he melts in epic fashion. And she says, "Whatever you were programmed for, I guess it wasn't telling the truth." That was good. It was epic. Or I'm sorry, whatever you were programmed for, I guess it wasn't telling the true thing.
Like, what? That's so bad. Oh man, and for me. I chose something from the beginning, actually. It's from Dr. Tobias. And the reason I chose it was because, like, it could have been about 5 seconds shorter, I think, and it would have worked. It went on for way too long, but it was
I think I know which one you're going to do.
We have destroyed the XYZ nightmare. We have destroyed the XYZ nightmare. We have destroyed the XYZ nightmare. I'm going to stop there. That's enough. I'll stop with the rule of three or whatever it's called. Oh, man. It's terrible. But I'm going to post a poll on Twitter, and I'll share it on Facebook as well, and just all those social media places. And who did it better, Anthony, Tom, or myself? And if history has showed me anything, it's that it's not going to be myself, but I'm going to try anyway.
I don't know. I feel
I'm like voting for Jerry. I'm just going to call it now.
Jerry. I think he had the best one this year. This
I don't know. Episode. Y'all's are pretty good. I mean, whatever it was, that's just a great quote there. Not for telling the true things. Oh, man. But it, you know, I do have to ask. G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do y'all think is the other half?
knowing that when a Christmas podcast host have me and Tom on, it's going to devolve into craziness, and knowing that Anthony will use any excuse to bring the talk back to Batman when he's discussing other DC content.
Nice.
That's good. Which you just did. I'm going to stick with what I learned from this show, in that it is important to be the one guy who can identify an android from a human.
Oh, that's true. It is important. Well, for me, if knowing's half the battle, the other half is taking a comic character and changing his name just to create a new one. Mm-hmm. Oh man, guys, this has been a lot of fun. It's always a blast talking with you. You guys are like my brothers.
Right back at you, man.
But you know, I what do you want to plug? Tell me about your show.
Nah, let's plug your show. Okay. Actually, Anthony, do you want to pick a random podcast from the podcast network to talk about? I feel like everybody's tired of hearing about ours when we come visit.
We can plug another one, but I do want to mention our new segment on the show.
The one that I still owe you content for?
Yeah, I do too. Sorry.
And the one that Julia still owes you content for?
the one where everybody said, yeah, I'll help you out. You can read it. It'll be fun. And then like, hey guys, did you do it yet? Yeah, so Thursdays this week, everyone knows Tis the Podcast. You know, we cover Christmas movies and television shows every Monday. But this week, we're going to be dropping two episodes a week, counting down. This year, we're going to be dropping two episodes a week, counting down to Christmas 2021. And the Thursday episode is we're doing something a little different. Over the past few years, I wrote a Christmas novel called Another Christmas Story, which I'm trying to get published. But in the meantime, I thought I would share it with all you listeners out there by dropping a chapter a week, both in text form on our website and audio version on the podcast in your feeds every Thursday. And it's not going to just be me, Tom, and Julia reading it all. We've enlisted all the Christmas podcast hosts you know and love, including Joey D himself and a bunch of our frequent listeners who you've heard on our show, like ones who take pleasure in trolling me. I'm sure you can guess who that is. So yeah, check out. I think it's going to be really exciting. I think it's going to be a fun additional way to count down to the holidays this year.
So. Nice. Right on.
While we're talking stories, last year, one of the podcasts I really like a lot, Can't Wait for Christmas, did an awesome original.
It was good.
It was an audio drama called A Bomb for Christmas. So check out Tim Babb's podcast, Can't Wait for Christmas. It is absolutely epic.
It is. Oh, Tim Babb will be contributing to our story later this year too, which is very nice of him.
So. Nice. Right on. Yep. Yeah. And definitely check out Tis the Podcast. One of my favorites. It's not a Monday if I can't listen to it. It just feels wrong. And you'll love it. I know. In fact, if you're listening to my show, you're probably already listening to their show, but if you don't, then yeah, tune in, start from the beginning and work your way through and you'll love it. So you guys can be found at
tisthepodcast.com.
There you go.
And tisthepodcast.com/Patreon. No, not Patreon. /Facebook group, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit.
Reddit.
Very cool. And on that note, I'm going to end it one more time by saying thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. Can I say one more thing that you can maybe edit before? Yeah. Another thing about Tis the Podcast. Jerry did not have the best elf on tonight. You know, we're not this obnoxious. Well, we are this obnoxious on our show, but we do have a third co-host the effervescent and amazing Julia, who keeps both me and Tom in line completely. So, check us out if only to hear the best elf talk Christmas. yeah.
Nice. Yeah, for sure.
He's not denying it.
But on that note, I am going to say, all the world is waiting for you and the power you possess. So check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like Diana solving a mystery, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.
We're the elves from Tis the Podcast. I'm Anthony.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Tom. And Tis the Podcast is a proud member of the Christmas Podcast Network.
Join us each week as we rank, review, and discuss all your favorite Christmas movies and television shows.
Sometimes we agree, sometimes it's a verbal brawl, but each and every week is guaranteed to be fun. Come join us.